This is Free Speech Radio News for Tuesday, September 3, 2002. I'm Deepa Fernandez. In a landmark decision, the Israeli Supreme Court rules to expel family members of Palestinians deemed terrorists. The United Nations Earth Summit wraps up with a weak commitment to the environment, but on the street, thousands call for a truly sustainable environment. And across California, dock workers may strike as negotiations break down. But first, these news headlines.
I'm Randy Zimmerman with the headlines for Free Speech Radio News. Russia's top diplomat says his country would veto any move by the Bush administration to obtain Security Council backing for an attack on Iraq. Susan Wood reports from the United Nations.
Russian Foreign Minister Igor Ivanov said yesterday he hoped the issue of using military force against Iraq would not come up in the United Nations Security Council and that Russia's veto would not be necessary. Ivanov's comments followed his meetings in Moscow with Iraqi Foreign Minister Naji Sabri. It was the strongest statement so far by one of the five permanent council members with veto power, three of whom, China, France, and Russia, have opposed Washington's talk of a preemptive strike against Iraqi President Saddam Hussein. Ivanov said the Bush administration had provided no evidence that Iraq was developing weapons of mass destruction and accused the administration of wanting to oust the Iraqi regime for political reasons. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Susan Wood at the United Nations.
The Bush administration continues to downplay differences among the senior staff regarding Iraq, specifically between Secretary of State Colin Powell and the rest of the national security staff. Gareth Schweitzer files this report from D.C.
There are always differences of perspectives. There's differences of institutional differences from time to time.
Donald Rumsfeld said today that differences of opinion do actually exist in the Bush White House regarding Iraq. White House Press Secretary Ari Fleischer has consistently denied those differences, however, saying that each administration official was essentially saying the same thing. This position became harder to defend after excerpts of Colin Powell's interview with the BBC revealed the secretary's desire to send weapons inspectors back into Iraq and to present the international community with a case for war. Vice President Cheney said last week that sending weapons inspectors back into Iraq could be quote-unquote dangerous. Michael Donovan of the Center for Defense Information says that statements from the White House, Defense, and State clearly show Colin Powell standing alone on the issue of Iraq.
I think it's clear that there's a rift between the sort of true believers in the administration who want to make Iraq the first priority and the Secretary of State who sees some other priorities in the world that need to be addressed first.
For Free Speech Radio News in Washington, I'm Gareth Schweitzer.
The United States Navy is scheduled to resume bombing practice today on the Puerto Rico island Vieques. This morning, five people were detained for entering the bombing range in an effort to delay practice maneuvers. Shannon Novak reports.
Today begins 23 days of ship-to-shore and air-to-ground inert bombing practice in Vieques. This morning, five members of the Puerto Rico Independence Party were detained by officials for civil disobedience. Protesters routinely penetrate the bombing range to disrupt exercises. Ismael Guadalupe is a protest leader. He is at the Camp for Peace and Justice of Vieques.
They yesterday in the night, and this morning were arrested. That means that maybe next week and the other week that the maneuver is going to be, we are going to have people making disobedience to stop the bombing.
Vieques residents blame the Navy's occupation for high cancer rates on the island. The Navy denies the accusation. New cancer statistics were due out over a year ago, but still have not been released by Puerto Rico's government. The Navy has said it will withdraw in May 2003. Residents remain skeptical. In Miami, Shannon Novak for Free Speech Radio News.
Stock markets around the world tumbled today. The Japanese market hit its lowest mark in 19 years, and the U.S. stock market is maintaining its two-year volatility by dropping nearly 300 points. According to Chris Hartman, the senior researcher at United for a Fair Economy, the U.S. government will probably step in to provide relief for top dollar investors, not those whose pensions may be tied up in the market or the average worker.
What's going to be talked about in Congress in the next month is going to be more tax breaks for wealthy investors who have lost money in the stock market. Now, it's important to remember that these tax breaks will not help people who have money in 401k plans. They are only going to help people, primarily wealthy people, who are investing their own non-retirement funds in the stock market and have taken some losses recently. So that would be a fiscal stimulus, but it's again, the wrong kind.
Hartman adds the long-term picture indicates stocks are still overvalued since their price has little to do with actual corporate earnings. I'm Randy Zimmerman for Free Speech Radio News.
After U.S. Secretary of State Colin Powell disagreed with Vice President Dick Cheney on Sunday, saying that America's first step should be sending weapons inspectors back into Iraq, Iraq has declared itself open to the idea of weapons inspectors, indicating a new willingness to work with the United Nations. The announcement gives new hope to U.S. and European politicians who have repeatedly called for the return of weapons inspectors over an invasion by U.S. and British forces. European Union foreign ministers were unable to nail down a common position on the issue over the weekend at their meeting in Denmark. From Copenhagen, Patrick Beckett has more.
Iraqi Deputy Prime Minister Tariq Aziz said today Iraq is willing to work with the United Nations to find a solution to the crisis with the United States. Aziz said any agreement must also include a guarantee of Iraqi sovereignty and an end to UN sanctions. Aziz met with UN Secretary General Kofi Annan in Johannesburg this morning.
As I told the Secretary General, if anybody can have a magic solution so that all these issues are being dealt with together equitably, reasonably, we are ready to fight. And we are ready to cooperate with the United Nations. And we are ready to explain our position in a reasonable manner to all those concerned.
Aziz's statements will lend added weight to political opposition to any attack on Iraq at a time when the international community is largely divided on the issue. French President Jacques Chirac and German Chancellor Gerhard Schroeder have both spoken out in opposition to military action against Iraq. The British government continues to signal its support for U.S. plans to attack Iraq. Prime Minister Tony Blair.
Iraq poses a real and a unique threat to the security of the region and the rest of the world.
Former South African President Nelson Mandela said he was appalled at the idea the U.S. would go outside the United Nations and attack an independent country. He said the message is the U.S. is afraid of a veto in the U.N. Security Council. It is likely that Russia would veto any resolution permitting an attack on Iraq. Iran has also indicated it will not stand idle if U.S. attacks Iraq. The Iranian Foreign Ministry issued a statement that it cannot accept one country simply overthrowing another country's government, as it would create a dangerous norm. The Iraqi Deputy Prime Minister cautioned the U.N. Secretary General that any agreement on weapons inspectors must also include comprehensive resolution of a number of issues, including continued threats of aggression by the United States.
The sanctions are in place. There is no promise to lift them. The violation of international law is still in place in the north and in the south. The threats of an invasion of Iraq are being made by the Americans. The threats to change our political system is in place by the American government. So if you want to find a solution, you have to find a solution for all these matters.
While European countries are divided on an attack, most have expressed support for weapons inspectors. Ulla Klutzer is with the Alternative to the EU organization. Klutzer and about 1,000 others staged a demonstration outside the EU foreign ministers' meeting in Helsingør, Denmark, this weekend.
The main issue is, of course, the war against Iraq, which is planned and almost ready to get off. And I think that this weekend here in Helsingør will show that it's extremely difficult to build up a common defense policy for the EU. If you think of Blair, who is already sitting on his machine wanting to go to Baghdad, and you think of Gerhard Schröder, who says that not even with an EU mandate he would let German troops go in. So how can we define a common defense policy?
Iraq is just one of the issues that European governments have been unable to break the U.S. unilateral approach to. American withdrawal from the International Criminal Court has drawn sharp criticism from many European countries. Nevertheless, over the weekend, many European foreign ministers expressed support for bilateral agreements exempting U.S. personnel from the International Criminal Court. Britain and Italy have indicated they are considering signing such agreements with the U.S. Danish Foreign Minister Per Stig Møller said he will seek an EU-wide accord by September 30th to grant Americans immunity before the International Criminal Court in any cases related to peacekeeping operations. Ole Krarup is a member of the European Parliament and a professor of law at the Copenhagen Law School.
The United States has a practice to say, oh, condition for going into NATO, for the Baltic countries, Romania, Bulgaria, that you make a decision, a bilateral accordance with the United States, putting it out. And this is absurd. If you have such a criminal court, you can be in favor or you can be against. You have to give it a broader jurisdiction.
The U.S. has threatened to withdraw its troops from U.N. peacekeeping missions worldwide unless its forces are granted permanent immunity from the International Criminal Court. While the U.N. granted U.S. troops limited immunity in the Balkans, there is still no resolution for the long term. Meanwhile, Kofi Annan continues to call for a diplomatic solution and a return of weapons inspectors to Iraq. Patrick Beckett in Copenhagen for Free Speech Radio News.
The U.S. Senate came back from its summer recess today to debate the White House proposal for a Homeland Security Agency. The bill is hung upon labor issues as federal workers fear they'll lose some of their rights under the new agency. Elsewhere in Washington, D.C., Attorney General John Ashcroft said domestic drug sales are funding so-called terrorists in the Middle East. Critics say Ashcroft's DEA is wasting billions to fight a failed war on drugs. They hope the Homeland Security Agency doesn't follow suit for the sake of the so-called war on terrorism. But with a slim majority and congressional elections looming, Senate Democrats may not be willing to fight for a slimmer and more labor-friendly bill. Josh Chaffin reports from Capitol Hill.
The Homeland Security bill now before the Senate would be the biggest government reorganization since World War II, transferring 170,000 employees from 22 agencies to the new department, with funding estimated at $38 billion a year. The House passed its version of the bill already, but the Senate is hung up on the labor issue. President Bush wants greater flexibility to hire and fire workers and the ability to bar union membership for some. On the Senate floor this morning, Texas Republican Phil Graham urged workers and Senate Democrats to stay calm.
All this power does is gives the president the power to set aside elements of collective bargaining when national security is involved. Interestingly enough, the power the president sought, he has under existing law. The president was simply asking for an affirmation of existing power.
But Jackie Simon, with the American Federation of Government Employees, sees the Republican version of the Homeland Security bill as part of a bigger plan to bust unions government-wide. She says the president has already shown he's willing to abuse his power.
It was for purely political reasons to squash an organizing drive down in Miami. He took the entire unit and exempted them from collective bargaining rights. The rationale he used at the time was that he was worried about a strike. You know, I can't imagine that he was that ignorant of the law because, of course, federal employees don't have the right to strike.
Federal investigators, who would be part of the new Homeland Security Agency, now say they have evidence that money from drug sales in the United States is funding suspected terrorist activity in the Middle East. Attorney General John Ashcroft spoke to the issue at the dedication of a new DEA museum today in Washington.
Drug traffickers benefit from the paramilitary skills, the access to weapons, and the links to other clandestine groups that terrorists provide. Terrorists, for their part, gain a source of revenue, expertise in money laundering from drug traffickers.
Ashcroft says American law enforcement agencies should consider what he calls the war on drugs as an important part of what he calls the war on terrorism. But Ethan Nadelman says that's a mistake, and he hopes Ashcroft's ideas don't become part of the new agency's mandate. Nadelman argues for alternatives to the drug war with a D.C. group called the Drug Policy Alliance.
If we think that we can achieve homeland security by copying certain elements of the war on drugs, we're probably doomed to failure and much worse. I mean, my great fear is that the anti-terrorism effort in the United States will begin to resemble the war on drugs. And given the horrible failure of the war on drugs, given the tremendous waste of hundreds of billions of dollars and millions of lives and all the negative consequences generated with almost nothing to show for it, I mean, for that to become the model of homeland security would be a real tragedy.
Support for a Homeland Security Department is strong in the Senate. It's now a matter of what form the agency will take. Homeland Security Director Tom Ridge says the president should veto the bill if it doesn't include labor provisions the White House wants. Labor groups vow retribution at the ballot box in November if the Senate passes a bill they don't like. Josh Chaffin, Free Speech Radio News, Capitol Hill.
In a landmark decision, the Israeli Supreme Court ruled to expel family members of Palestinians deemed terrorists from the West Bank to Gaza. The decision upheld the expulsions of Intasar and Kifar Ajuri, sister and brother of Ali Ajuri, a member of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade militia, who allegedly dispatched a pair of suicide bombers to Tel Aviv on July 17. Two Israelis and three foreign workers were killed in that attack. Meanwhile, Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon decided to allow the Palestinian parliament to convene in the West Bank town of Ramallah, while withholding travel permits from legislators Israel deems to be involved in violence against Israelis. Legislators have been unable to hold a session due to sweeping Israeli travel bans. This as Israeli troops fired a tank shell at two Palestinians walking near a Jewish settlement in the West Bank, killing two. Over the weekend, some 10 Palestinians died in separate incidents. Tim Russo has more from Jenin.
Today, Israeli Public Security Minister Uzi Landau hailed as a victory and a deterrent to future suicide bombings a high court decision to deport family members of so-called terrorists from the West Bank to the Gaza Strip as appropriate steps to take at this time. Leah Samuel, a human rights lawyer and the defense attorney for two of the three defendants who were accused of abetting terrorism by giving food to, lending a car to, and letting their relatives stay in their homes, gave a distinct view about the expulsions, considering it yet another means of a collective punishment for Palestinians.
There is a row of decisions that was taken by the Supreme Court, including the house demolitions, massive house demolitions. Now we are talking about expulsion of people from their houses to another area, and we don't know what will be in the future. There is a question of executions pending now in the Supreme Court. We hope that the Supreme Court will stop before the deterioration.
Palestinian cabinet member Saeb Erekat also condemned the Israeli High Court decision about the expulsions of family members of so-called terrorists.
This is a sad day for human rights. This is a black day for international law. The Palestinian Authority will go to the Security Council, will go to the International Court of Justice, will seek the help of all those interested in preserving the human rights and the Fourth Geneva Conventions worldwide, because this is a very dangerous precedent.
Although some debate has been created by today's court case, the civilian death toll this weekend created internal investigations and generated new debates among Israelis about current policies. In Tubas, an attack using two Apache helicopters that killed four civilians, including two children, in an effort to assassinate a low-level member of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade, Rafa Dargan, came under sharp criticism. A man who was asked not to be identified by name explained the sequence of events.
Two helicopters come. They shoot two cars. The first bomb, not exactly on the car, near a home. Two children were playing in their home. One about 6 years, and the other his sister, I think. It's 8 years old. The second shooting on the car. One of the car, of the passengers of the car, escaped. One of them was shot down, which is, his name is Rafat. Two persons walking on the street, 15 years old, they killed in the same bomb. The reaction, as you see, all the people are here for this, what happened in Tubas, and all in this time, because we want to live in peace in these areas, but no peace here while the Israelis fighting our people. That's all.
Another four Palestinian civilians were shot dead on Sunday just outside of Hebron as they walked through a field that the Israeli Defense Forces claim has been a staging grounds for previous attacks against illegal Israeli settlers in the area. Also Sunday morning, a 17-year-old teenager was shot down by the IDF in the Jenin refugee camp and bled to death while his unarmed brother was injured trying to pull him out of range of the Israeli sniper. Two more Palestinian youth turned resistant were literally blown to bits by an Israeli tank shelling this morning outside of Nablus, starting off September as a particularly bloody month in the West Bank. Meanwhile, a UN envoy to the Middle East, Birgit Larsen, said he was deeply disturbed by the recent killing of Palestinian civilians by army fire and demanded Israeli officers to be held accountable. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Tim Russo, reporting from the West Bank.
After a long summer of tough negotiations, contract talks between West Coast dock workers and the Pacific Maritime Association broke down on Sunday, paving the way for job actions that could disrupt the flow of cargo into the West Coast. The International Longshore and Warehouse Union is in a struggle to preserve its way of life and to protect job security in the face of new technologies on the docks, but it faces an industry group backed not only by powerful retailers like Walmart, but also by the Bush administration. John Hamilton has this report.
Not since Ronald Reagan broke the Air Traffic Controllers Organization in 1981 has a U.S. president been pitted so directly against a major labor union, with a Bush White House standing firmly behind the Pacific Maritime Association, the PMA. The International Longshore and Warehouse Union has been appealing for grassroots support in its fight for a new contract.
When I say fight, you say together. We fight!
Together!
We fight!
The union's been rallying frequently, like yesterday's demonstration on the docks of Los Angeles and this rally in Oakland 2 weeks ago.
The Bush administration may not have officially declared war on the ILWU, but the actions of this administration make it very, very clear that we're on their hit list.
Not only has the White House threatened to invoke Taft-Hartley laws to order an 80-day cooling-off period in the event of a strike or lockout, but it's invoking the war on terrorism to break the ILWU's strength at the bargaining table. According to union spokesperson Steve Stallone, Homeland Security Director Tom Ridge has been in direct contact with Union President James Spinoza, and meanwhile, the administration is prepared to use naval seamen as strike breakers.
The latest information we have is that the Bush administration has assembled a bunch of trained Navy dock workers from their bases around the world in San Diego and has them in place and ready to move to take over should they decide that that's the time to do it, or whenever they decide it's the time to do it. This, of course, all coming at a time when we're supposed to be in a war against terrorism. Right now, Bush is using military troops and spending military funds to move against American workers involved in a legitimate labor dispute.
Stallone says the White House's unconditional support for the PMA has led to a breakdown in talks as the industry group engages in what the union calls bait and switch bargaining.
The problem we've been having is that every time we think we have come to some kind of arrangement that both sides could live with, they suddenly change the terms of the deal and back off.
For example, the union says it reached an agreement with the PMA on health benefits only to have the offer removed from the table. But the final straw, says Stallone, came after the union offered the PMA a major concession by allowing new technology on the docks.
The ILWU had already proposed allowing all the latest new technology to be brought in, knowing full well that we were going to lose a bunch of jobs in the process, but asking simply that what jobs were left over and what jobs would be created by the new technology would be done by ILWU members.
But on Saturday, the PMA rejected the union's proposal, forcing Sunday's walkout. The ILWU refused the PMA's call for another contract extension, paving the way for job actions that could disrupt the smooth flow of cargo into West Coast ports.
Any decisions on whether job actions and what actions and where that may take place won't be made until a negotiating committee meets in San Francisco this afternoon to discuss the situation.
Under U.S. law, an intentional work slowdown is illegal. However, the dock workers could legally slow down cargo shipments by working precisely to every rule in the book. The PMA has promised a lockout if such a so-called work-to-rule job action occurs. With the Workers' Independent News Service for Free Speech Radio News, I'm John Hamilton.
Environmental and development groups have harshly criticized the final document of the Earth Summit in Johannesburg, in which they accused the EU of capitulating to the United States. The final agreement is a watered-down deal which, rather than set firm targets and a timetable to encourage the spread of wind, solar, and other renewable energies in developing countries, only encourages the use of fossil fuel energies. Environmentalists and NGOs say the private sector is not mandated by the agreement to behave responsibly, nor is there any recognition of the need for an agreement on corporate accountability. Yet, as Naeem Jinnah reports, on the streets of Johannesburg the last 5 days have seen much thinking, strategizing, and protesting against these very issues.
For most South Africans, the past 5 days were important more for their extra summit activities than for what was happening at the World Summit on Sustainable Development in Johannesburg. The highlight, or highlights, was Saturday, when about 30,000 people marched from Johannesburg's squalid Alexandra Township to opulent Sandton, where heads of governments are debating various issues in the WSSD. Representatives of social movements from around the world addressed the rally outside the venue of the WSSD. The ANC government was repeatedly slated by speakers. And Isup Pahad, minister in the president's office, was booed and asked to leave when he came to receive a memorandum. The people wanted President Thabo Mbeki and no one else. The ANC-led march, by contrast, attracted about 5,000 people and was addressed by Mbeki, who called for an end to what he called global apartheid. It was a loud message to South Africa's political establishment. The landless have landed. The poor will have their voices heard, even if it means doing it in competition to the government. According to one marcher,
it reflected that the social movements are beginning to unite, and the people are disenchanted with the ruling government at the present moment, and that they are disenchanted with the neoliberal policies, and it also exposed the international community to the level of poverty and squalor in Alexandra, and also it provided a moment for the international community to share experiences.
In the run-up to the marches, the Palestine Solidarity Committee, a member of the social movements in Durban, held a solidarity rally on Friday night, attended by 3,000 people. A trainload of Palestinian supporters travelled for 27 hours from Cape Town for the rally and march, and a busload of people travelled 10 hours from Durban. From the list of speakers, the slogans, and the unashamed publicising of the SMI march, it was clear where Palestinian supporters stood on the march contest. In the words of a leader of the Cape Town train, "We are here to march for Palestine, but we have to march with the poor of South Africa." That link is being made often by South Africans. Salim Valley of the PSC.
We cannot be happy in the face of this kind of oppression. Whether it's the poor people in the townships here who don't have electricity or water or get evicted, or whether it's the struggle in Palestine, we have to stand together. And the past few weeks have shown me that the poor of this country particularly are our genuine allies, that the rich and powerful and those in government with a forked tongue.
Last night, the PSC again launched itself and its SMI partners into the limelight with a demonstration outside a Wits University campus, where Israeli Foreign Minister Shimon Peres addressed a meeting. The protesters, including staff and students of the university, were upset that the security of the campus was handed over to the South African Jewish Board of Deputies for the day, and that access was based on race. Only whites were allowed into the campus. Blacks were denied access. After a three-hour demonstration, the protesters marched to a nearby police station to secure the release of a PSC member who was arrested when the protest began. He is a staff member of the university who was trying to get into his office. But within a few minutes, the area outside the police station looked like a war zone. Protesters sitting on the road were attacked with water cannons, batons, and rubber bullets. 19 more people were arrested, including 4 minors. 4 of the arrested were so badly injured they had to be hospitalized. It was the most violent day in the whole WSSD period. Many activists are suggesting that this incident reminds them of the days of apartheid. And after the summit, South Africa will not be the same again. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Naeem Jina in Johannesburg.
This is Free Speech Radio News. I'm Deepa Fernandez.